It is that time. It is a Wednesday. It is time to talk to my friend, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com Cover 3 podcast moderator. How are you, sir?
I'm enthused. How are you doing today?
Oh, we have an enthused Chip Patterson. All right, tell me why you are enthused at Chip_Patterson.
Because I was in the building last night. You know how good it feels to be in the building? To see the victory again? And as you said on the Kids Corner Morning After podcast, that it's okay to win. You know, it's okay.
Yep.
You can go out and do it. It wasn't pretty, but it was a win. It sets up a very interesting conclusion to the season on Thursday.
Thursday is a big deal. They won the game in the first period, scored two goals early, and then Antti Raanta had to be good at the end of the first period because if it's 2-1 going into the first intermission, you feel a little bit differently going into the second period. Carolina had control of the game. Even though they allowed the first goal of the second period, everything was cool because Antti did his job, and I said before, he's going to be the game one starter. I just don't know how you can go to Freddie Anderson unless Anderson tomorrow night starts and stands on his head. I think the game one starter will be Antti Raanta against whomever they play. So have you seen the Tom Izzo comments about the portal?
I have not seen them in their entirety. I was listening to the Adam Gold Show on the way rushing back from Wegmans. And so I did catch the conversation, which I heard was also going to be pitched to Chip Patterson. So, don't worry, chicken breasts are in the refrigerator and we're good to dive in on Tom Izzo in the modern era in college sports.
Outstanding. I understand what is... To me, it's because all of these things that happen in college sports, how do they impact the coaches? They decide whether they like it or not based on how it impacts them. So I get it's made his life more difficult. Roy Williams used to complain about the recruiting calendar all the time, or the NBA draft calendar. The players would have X amount of time to decide whether or not they were going to come back. And Roy would complain about it based on how it impacted his ability to recruit. I get it. I always look at these things from a perspective of a player. What's best for them? Since I think I always thought that intercollegiate athletics were supposed to be about the athlete experience. So let's look at it from their perspective. I get what Izzo's saying, though. We probably have too much movement, although I think everybody should be allowed at least one free one. That to me is the only place where I can understand where Izzo's coming from. The rest of it, he just sounds like old guy.
Well, I want to focus on the coaching side of this. Were you a Mad Men fan or are you a Mad Men fan?
I've never watched.
Okay. Great scene in season 4. If you ever decide to dive in where, Peggy and Don are in the office and she's basically spilling out a lot of frustrations for not getting enough credit. And she says, and you never say thank you. And in a great line from the show, Don Draper says, that's what the money's for. And that's what I say to coaches. That's what the money's for. And Sonny Dykes, when we were talking to him at the national championship game in Los Angeles, he provided an opinion and a point of view and a perspective that was so far from everything that we had heard from coaches all through bowl season, all through the early signing period, complaining. And I agree, it is a crunched calendar. The idea that you are having to recruit high schoolers, recruit your own roster, recruit the transfer portal, prepare for a bowl game, and try to manage all of that at the same time, is a ton. It is truly unprecedented in terms of the way that the college football coach has built their calendar for years. But what else is unprecedented? College football coaching salaries. And they continue to go up. Yeah. And they are not changing no matter what the stock market does and no matter what the projections are or the interest rates. The salaries of college football coaches continue to go up. So that's why I call back Don Draper and say that's what the money's for. That's what TCU head coach Sonny Dykes was saying. He said, look, we get paid a lot of money. These are problems for us to get figured out, and we are being compensated to do that. To Tom Izzo, I got to go back to it. That's what the money is for. To your part of this with the players in terms of, should we be able to rein this back in? Should we be able to put in some guardrails? I tend to find that the really ridiculous transfer stories stand out because they are uncommon. Mm-hmm. The 4 schools in 5 years right. kind of basketball players. Like that, it doesn't happen a ton. It is notable when it does. And sometimes you can tie back some storylines or at least, you know, some reasons as to why they somewhat make sense. In general, my opinion is that they should have as much movement as the coaches. If the coaches are able to move, then the players should be able to move because it is that player-coach relationship which has established why they're there in the first place.
I think we spent how many decades trying to pretend that we were treating the athlete just like the regular student while not allowing them the same freedoms of the regular student. And now that we're that they have the same freedoms of the regular student, we get mad. We get mad at it. Well, it's just,
and there's also like a couple. I don't know. I don't want to air anyone's laundry out, but there was one transfer that did happen and one transfer that didn't happen. Both quarterbacks where it was regular student problems, because if you're a regular student and you want to transfer to another university, you got to get your classes in order, your academic, right. You've got to apply, you've got to be accepted, and they have to be willing to accept your credits, right? Us as university number two need to look at what you've done at university number one and say that meets our standard. And with one of these quarterbacks, there was not a belief that he was going to be able to get it together, to pull all of his credits together, to finally end up at school number two. He did. And with the other quarterback, other schools were looking at what he had done. They're like, we don't accept that. I'm sorry. Like if you transfer right now, I don't know if we can accept you. And that is instances, like if you want to be in the purest, we want to treat them as students. I will say that in this last college football transfer window, I have heard of notable times where the actual academics, actual student part of this process has been a factor in the transfer portal.
Well, not in the SEC though, right? Just kidding.
I don't want to besmirch the academic experience of a certain notable Group of Five program. Right. But if there was a talented quarterback at the Group of Five level who certainly could have walked right into the door at the University of Florida and been the QB1, but he's not there.
Oh, man, that's too bad.
So now Billy Napier, he's out here with really scraping the edges trying to be able to put together an offense for the Gators in 2023.
Oh, no. All right, let me get to really commissioner issues real quick. Chip Patterson, as always, on a Wednesday. Let's start with the ACC, and these are two related things. Obviously, either Jim Phillips wasn't going to get the gig, or Jim Phillips decided that this is where he wanted to be.
Oh, it was just like a coaching search.
It really was.
We got the contract extension for candidate A the day before the new hire was announced. It's exactly the way that we figure these things out every single December. I loved the timing.
I thought, when I read the story, I thought, okay, Jim Phillips was not selected as the next Big Ten commissioner. I think people who cover the Big Ten assumed it was going to be Jim Phillips. So Phillips is the signed a three-year contract extension to stay as commissioner of the ACC. I know some people who cover the ACC that are not happy that Jim Phillips is still the commissioner of the ACC. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that the most interesting side of this, that he's not going to the Big Ten, means that he has to face all the problems that he's talked about. And I say right. that because I think that he's been honest. I think that when something has not gone well for the ACC, Jim Phillips has said, you know, we need to get better here.
Right.
And being unafraid to acknowledge that is great. But if he was just going to leave to go to the Big Ten and not fix any of those problems, it wasn't going to mean a whole lot. Now Jim Phillips is going to be right at the forefront of taking all of the things on that list where he said the ACC needs to get better, and he's going to be responsible for that happening.
Yeah, be a problem solver. Yeah, he's going to have to be a problem solver.
I have heard positive feedback of Jim Phillips from ACC football coaches. ACC football coaches who have said that they feel heard, and that some of the efforts that even go all the way back to when he first took office during the pandemic and everything else, you know, whether it's Dave Clawson or Dabo Swinney, they say that Jim Phillips has provided opportunities for the ACC football coaches to feel like they have an outlet and not just have to run all the way through the entire chain of command, that they've got a way to speak to the league office and a way to have real impact. ACC football coaches like him. That is a group that is supportive, I would say, of Jim Phillips' tenure so far, as short as it may be, as ACC commissioner. But I am fascinated to see Jim Phillips standing in the larger college sports environment, if he still has a lot of the stances and, you know, opinions and perspectives that he had at the ACC football kickoff last year. Then he is standing in one end of the room, and there are other people within the college sports industry that are on the other end. He is still in the opinion that the college sports model is worth upholding and not worth tearing down and starting over. He is still looking at all of the sports, not just the revenue sports. And he is still very much looking at a world where the athletic department is a part of the university family. And that is one end of the room as we look at the future of college sports.
Yeah, that would be my criticism of Jim Phillips, that I was actually referred to as a Pollyanna yesterday, indirectly. And I accepted it and embraced it, actually. But I do think that you could say that there is a Pollyanna-ish view of intercollegiate athletics from a revenue standpoint, from just a place in the college, you know, environment, ecosystem standpoint, that really no longer exists. And until we move on from that, until we have we have to create revenue streams, we have to treat the athletes differently, we have to treat the sport different. We have to treat it like professional sports, because that's really what it is. It is the biggest moneymaker that we've got in athletics. Football, basketball to an extent, but obviously football. If we still think about this as an extracurricular activity, we just can't grow. We can't move forward. We're always going to be trying to drag it back, which is why all the conversations I've had with Jim Phillips have dealt with, because I don't even ask him, do we need Congress? I just like, why do we need Congress? Why do you need Congress? They're not going to help you. And all they're going to try and help you do is restrict. And that shouldn't be where we're going. So that is my criticism of Jim Phillips and of some of the other the ADs and the presidents that pay his salary, is that we need to move beyond this. I don't know intimately what your Mark is doing or Sankey in terms of all of the things that they're thinking about, but I would like to see a forward thinker. I hope that Jim Phillips can become that, but I like him personally, but I'm a little worried about that part.
If to push back for the purposes of conversation, I'm not just doing this for the purposes of conversation. I do believe this. I would like for the room of powerful people that are deciding the future of college athletics to not all be of the same mind. I would like to have one voice that is saying, disconnect the athletic department from the universities, turn them into their own businesses. They become franchises, organizations, and college football players are employees of this franchise, and they can be compensated and, you know, this, that, or the other, all the way professionalization. And then I would like another voice to be somewhere where Jim Phillips is, because that means that if we are sensible and reasonable, which who knows, that we end up with a little bit of both and we have some kind of compromise, because it is fascinating and messy. And every single time I think about it, I don't have good answers and someone can always poke holes in my plan.
Right.
That's why I just would like for the room of Power Five commissioners and ESPN and Fox and CBS executives and everybody else that is crafting the future of big time college football and college athletics as a whole, I'd like for there to be I would like for there to be disagreement, and I would like to land somewhere in the middle on it.
But what we need is for the person with the more collegial ideas to be in either the SEC or the Big Ten, since if they have the person with more financial and expansion ideas, they have all the money and all the, like, so we're not going to have a narrowing of the landscape. We're going to have an expanding, we're going to have a widening of the gap between where the Big Ten is. The finances are already you know, overwhelming at times, which is why you see the angst at a Florida State, or I'm guessing there's still plenty of angst at a Clemson or at a Miami or even at North Carolina down the road. That we've, you know, we're staring at the gulf between, you know, like, why does Vanderbilt get this amount of money out of media and we here who create a lot more influence than Vanderbilt? It's just like they are the small house in the gated community whose value goes up because of where they are. And we have, it's the opposite for schools in like the ACC or the Big 12 or whatever remains of the Pac-10 or Pac-12. Let me ask you about the new commissioner of the Big 10, which comes from the TV ranks. Your thoughts there?
I think that the fact it wasn't an outright TV executive, because that was also a possibility here, indicates that among the Big Ten university presidents, you know, you do have some forward thinkers, but that you've got some collegial ideas as well. Like if it was a former Fox executive, because this, we're at least going like, you know, Major League Baseball, you've got like a couple different pieces that you can put together.
Right.
But I think that there is still a diversity of thought within the ranks of the Big Ten university presidents, and we can sit around and guess which one of those schools cares about the money, which one of those schools cares about the college side of things. So it's good to see that there's still the versatility of thought in the Big Ten.
You can care about the college side of things when you're getting $100 million a year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you absolutely can. All right. Final thing. Thoughts on Jon Rahm and winning the Masters, which I said on Monday, it's different when a guy like, and I'll just use a Cam Smith, who's a great player, but is not necessarily a giant in the sport. It's different. It hits differently when a Jon Rahm wins a major.
All for about a calendar year, we've just kind of been looking at that Rahm, Rory, Scotty trio. Who showed up? They're just saying no question. Yeah. Rory didn't even make the weekend. Scotty,
that hurt, by the way. That hurt.
Like, me. Was a mess all over the place. Forgot how to putt.
He got back into it on the fringe on Sunday.
But I mean, it was easy to get back into it.
Sure.
Like you could come up and join the glut at four, five, six. That was sort of building on the leaderboard. But I mean, Jon Rahm's just. He's that dude right now.
I watched him four-putt the first hole. I did. I watched him four-putt the first hole and hit his drive. He thought too far left on two. He still made birdie. He was fine from that point.
It was, I mean, we all heard the jokes. Brooks Koepka didn't know what to do after 54 holes. Yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, he was fine.
It was right there. But on the live note, Jon Rahm and Brooks Koepka, no beef.
None.
They seem to have a very pleasant time spending 30 holes together.
Yes.
Which I cannot say I would have a pleasant time with anybody spending 30 holes together in a competitive environment.
I could spend 60 holes with Chip Patterson.
Are we competing against each other or with each other?
That's a good point. That's a very good point, Chip Patterson.
You know, the same sort of thing with Phil. It seemed like the idea that we were going to have this massive rivalry of tours at the major championships, if the first major is any indication, it's not a non-issue.
Well, I don't know. I think it might be an issue in other places. It's the power of the Masters. The Masters is the overwhelming part of this equation. It engulfs everything. We might have it at the U.S. Open. We might have it at the PGA. We might have it at the Open Championship. We were never having it at Augusta National. Chip Patterson at Chip_Patterson. My friend, I could spend 60 holes with you even competing.
I don't know if I could spend 60 holes with me competing.
Oh, man.
I'm walking out. I'm mad at myself. Throwing myself into Ray's Creek.
Oh, man. I'll talk to you later. Bye.